You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show. My name is Kirk Barron, where we take a look at the best practices from the best practices. And you're going to enjoy today's episode. I got a good friend of mine on, Dr. Rob Ritter, who is a phenomenal dentist and a great thinker. And he and his partner, Dr. Chris Ramsey, number one, they're great guys. I love having drinks with them at the bar, at the Seattle Study Club meeting, or wherever we're going. And they're also great thinkers, great leaders in education. And today we're going to be talking about one of the biggest things that happened in their practice that I haven't heard them talk about, which is why did it take so long when they bought the practice to be able to convert it to what they really wanted to have happen in the practice. And you'll learn more about that in just a second. But a couple things before we get started, I just want to say thank you to everybody that's listening. We're starting a brand new year here, and this has been crazy. I don't even know how this is working. I don't even know why it's working. All I know is I'm having fun doing this. And keep sending us your suggestions that you guys want to see for the Best Practice Show, because our goal here is just to provide some great stuff. I want you to listen to this stuff every single day when you're driving into work or you're doing yard work or cleaning your house, whatever, and say, you know what? I got some good stuff and it made my practice a little bit better. And as a result, my life got a little bit better. And that's a win for all of us. So keep sending suggestions, shares, all that kind of stuff. And first off, I want to introduce my good friend, Dr. Rob Ritter. Now, Rob, you were the second guest I ever had on the podcast. I called you, you're like, yeah, I'll jump on. And so, I always want people to know who we're listening to. Today, we're going to be talking about a very important subject. So if you're a dentist and you're ever going to buy a practice, you don't want to make the mistakes that Dr. Rob Ritter made. And he's going to be talking about these today. But I want people to know who you are before we get into the subject. So who are you?
Well, I am Rob Ritter. Dr. Rob Ritter. I'm originally born in Manhattan, but I live in Palm Beach County since 1975. I grew up in very rural West Palm Beach. It was actually called Green Acre City. And when I applied for college, I actually didn't put Green Acre City down. I thought they would laugh at me. So I put West Palm Beach down. Wow. And then I graduated college at USF up in Tampa. And then I went to the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston, South Carolina, graduated from there, moved back home, was an associate for 2 years in the practice that I eventually bought. But Kirk, before I even start, hey, happy new year to you. Good to see you again, my friend. Yeah. And, you know, podcasting is, I think, is such a great way for us to connect. And I know I haven't seen you in a while in person.
Yeah.
So this is great to just see you this way. It's better than nothing. But I'm looking forward to eventually seeing you in person. And we'll definitely get together and have a couple of drinks, too. But this is great. And I think you're doing a wonderful job with this. And it's a really great adjunct for people to continue to learn and to listen and to implement from this. And this medium wasn't around when I started practicing years ago. So This is a great opportunity for people to cull a lot of good information and kind of implement it in their practice.
Yeah, and you got a few cards up your sleeve. You've got something planned in the future. I don't even know what the heck it is, but it's with our good friend, Dr. Bob Marjois. And you've got a little breakfast club going on where you guys have a little banter. Yeah. So we're going to bring that to life. And there's no secrets to this. I'm not good at a lot of things, but I love this industry. I love hanging out with you guys and just learning. And we're both serious CE junkies. But I want to go back to a couple things. So once you returned home and then you started in practice, like give us a little sense of your journey. What was your journey once you came back home and you started to get out there and do dentistry?
So the journey, just so everybody knows, was not a straight line. I mean, Everybody thinks it's a straight line. It's 4 years of college, 4 years of dental school. You come back home, you're an associate, you buy a practice, that sort of thing. That's not the way it works for most people. There's a lot of offshoot along the way, some fits and starts. Some things work, some things don't. I mean, I was associate in two practices at one time. I thought I was going to buy one practice. It fell through. Thankfully, it did. This other practice I was an associate with, I wound up going ahead and, you know, purchasing the practice after 2 years. And I learned so much along the way as a primary, owner that had an associate. I bought this practice. It was a typical, at the time, this is back in the mid-90s, a typical PFM drill fill heavy amalgam practice with some composites in the interior, not doing really any smile design porcelain work, and a lot of traditional type patients there. I come in, I'm not 6 months out of dental school. My first dental course I take is, I call him Uncle Bill Strupp over in Clearwater. Yeah. I see just the most exquisite quadrant and arch dentistry done. And I remember going into his office and telling him, I want to do the type of dentistry that you do. And then I went back and took a lot of the skill set that he taught me and started implementing that in the practice. Well, one of the issues that I had amongst many was about right off the bat, I had a couple of team members who did not buy in. Okay. Because they were used to the dentistry done by the dentist that I had purchased from the practice, who was gone in 6 months. The transition was not well done. I was just happy to have my own practice, right? There weren't many practices available to buy. I wasn't going to start from scratch. It's too difficult where we live. And so I bought this practice, and then I allowed the owner to send out a letter stating that he was retiring. And within literally 4 weeks, I lost 20% of the practice. Wow. It was just not well thought out, not well done. It was more of an ego trip for him to send out the letter saying that he was happy to be retiring. And it just wasn't really beneficial to me.
Okay.
Then I started implementing better type of dentistry in the fact that I'm offering more alternatives to traditional PFM dentistry. People got upset with that. I didn't think I did a great job of implementing that as well. And then you put on top of that team members who, when I would present treatment to them, I'd walk out of the room and the patient said, well, to the patient, the hygienist would say, well, I can't afford that. The hygienist would say that.
Wow.
Or the hygienist would come up to me and say, do they have to do all three? Why can't you just do one?
Yeah.
And I'm having these, conversations, and it makes me uncomfortable with my own team members who I'm paying, right?
Yeah.
And it just took me way too long to get rid of them, both patient-wise and with employees. It just took me too long. I was too nervous. I had a very large note. Honestly,
We'll go back to that. So we're all on the same page. You bought the practice by yourself before you and Ramsey put it together.
Oh yeah. So just so you know that I bought the practice. I had another associate in the practice for 3 years who also did not do the same type of dentistry as me, did not have the training along the way that I had. Mm-hmm. He was offering lower, quite honestly, economical dentistry, like almost bottom line entry level dentistry when I'm trying to do much higher quality rubber dam dentistry. So there was a complete, division between the types of dentistry offered under one roof. That's a big no-no in your practice.
Yeah.
That you need to eliminate immediately from your practice.
Well, let's speak about the reality. So how many team members was it like when you bought it? How many?
At the time I had three assistants, four assistants for two docs, three hygienists, and three people working at the front.
Okay, so how old were you?
I was 29 years old.
Okay, so at 29, I mean, I'm 51 and I'm still, I'm still an idiot. But like you're a smart guy. So in your 20s, you got a lot of debt. you know, you come in and you're a super nice guy. So I don't see you being like a hard-nosed type person. And so you hear this all the time. People say, when you buy a practice, don't change it a lot. Where were you at mentally, emotionally, when you were, you know, you made the purchase?
I just did the complete opposite. I made all the changes I wanted to make. And it was painful because both the team members and some of the patients, 50% of the patients, didn't like the changes. The problem was I didn't want to do PFM amalgam dentistry. Mm-hmm. I was taught by better people. I had taken courses from, you know, like I said, from Bill Strupp. I took one from Bertolotti. I took one from Ron Jackson. I took one. I mean, you start naming the people in dentistry at the time, and it was all about a different type of dentistry, right? It was rubber dam, composite dentistry, indirect ceramics, even smile design. And so that was so fundamentally different than the type of dentistry coming out of that practice. And there were so many patients in need of that type of dentistry that if I didn't offer it to them, then they wouldn't have known this option. And right. I think that's another issue. You know, if you don't mention it to them, people don't know. Now, remember, this is before what the transformation of the internet, social media, interaction, knowledge base that we have now. And so people didn't even know who I was. I wouldn't say that they wouldn't trust me. I just had to prove myself over and over again. And that's just one facet of what was going on. Ramsey eventually became my associate. He was my associate for 4 years before we bought our practice, okay, before we moved our space. Okay. So those first 3 years, I had one associate. The last four was Ramsey. And then at the end of 7 years, right when I pay off the other practice, right when I'm done, I jump right in to another practice where we moved our practice, where we bought the space, built out our own dream office, and took on new debt again.
Wow.
We didn't have 1 month break between paying it off and jumping in, but I had to because I didn't own the space. I was renting from the gentleman that I bought the practice from. He didn't want to sell me the office as far as the actual condo. And I just wasn't going to pay him rent for the rest of my life. So I bit the bullet, bought a new condo space, doubled the size of the practice, and just kind of grew into it.
Yeah. So go back to this. Now, one of the things you said before we hit the go button was like, You took a lot of time. Like, take us through a couple instances. I mean, it's easy. You know, you and I both know this. Like, it's really easy to talk about this stuff on a podcast, but it's harder to live it. And you mentioned it took you way too long. What does that mean?
It did. It did. It just took too long and it took too much. You know, I would internalize a lot of it. It took too long to get to the type of office environment, facility, team members, cohesive unit, vision, branding. It just took too long to get to where I wanted to be. Now, part of the problem was I didn't have the right associate that would become my partner to begin with. Let's just say that right up front. And I let the associate stay for 3 years for all the wrong reasons. See, I did everything wrong the first 3 years. Everything you could think of, right? And learn from my mistakes. I have no problem sharing it. You want to ask me a question? Ask me the question. I'll tell you. I gave in to patients' demands. I let them say things to me that I would never let somebody say to me right now. I let my team members do things that I would never let happen right now. I did not have a clear, coherent message.
Yeah.
I tried to kind of hone it all together early on, but it really didn't come together until Chris became my associate. That we formed this partnership, that we had this vision of what we wanted to do, what we wanted to be known as, how we wanted to do it for the next 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
And so all those mistakes I made, right? So again, I walk in the room, I tell the patient they need, they have a broken cusp on, I don't know, let's just call it tooth number 19. They've broken the mesial lingual cusp and has a large MOD amalgam. Hey, let's just do a conservative onlay on the tooth. Right? I walk out of the room. The hygienist says, I'm sure we can just get the other doctor to patch it with some composite or something like that.
Oh, so what'd you do? Like, what do you do when that happens? I'd probably run away and, you know, cry in a corner, but like, what did you do?
What do I do? Well, at that moment, you can't address it at that moment because you can't make decisions when you're angry, right? You have to take some time to chill out. So you go in the back of the office and you think, what am I doing wrong? And so you eventually have these individual meetings with your team members and say to them, this is the vision I have for the practice. This is the type of dentistry I want to do. This is the way that we're going to do it. If this is not what you're comfortable with, then maybe this is not the right place for you.
Yeah. So you had a pretty big team. I mean, give us some perspective on this. Did you turn over the whole team?
Eventually I did.
You did. Okay.
Eventually I did. Now, my office manager who's with me has been with me for 22 years. Okay. She is literally, I think, the first hire that I made when I started turning over the team.
Okay. Now, listen, can we talk about this, though? And she's awesome. Listen, the problem isn't always like you got to buy a practice and fire everybody. That's not our message here. Like the message is you got to start standing up for where you want to go. And then people have a choice. Would you agree?
100%. Very well said. I am not advocating. Let's make sure the things that we're not advocating. Okay. I'm not advocating dropping insurance. I'm not advocating walking into a practice, purchasing, and firing all the employees,
right.
Firing the patients, sending dismissal letters. I'm not advocating any of that. There was somebody very famous who advocated all that, who doesn't practice anymore, by the way,
right?
Who led some people down the wrong path. That is not what I'm saying. I'm saying you need to go into the practice, figure out in the first year what's working, what's not working. Mm-hmm. Figure out the team members who buy into the vision that you have for the practice and empower them. And then let the others get weeded out over a period of time. Because the truth is, the most of the people that you start with are probably not going to be with you 5 years down the line if you start to make changes to the practice that you want as far as your big vision of the type of dentistry that you want to do. I'm very clear about what I do and what I don't do. Mm-hmm. Everybody understands that I am not the super dentist. I have never put an implant in a mouth.
Never.
Yeah. The last tooth I took out was 17 or 18 years ago.
Okay.
The last root canal I did was 27 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
The last set of complete dentures I did was 27 years ago. I know the type of dentist I am. I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not. So everything else gets referred out of my practice.
That's awesome.
I'm very clear about that.
Yeah, go back to, so I've never asked you this question. So when you purchase the practice, like how much insurance, like we talked about, you mentioned the dentistry, but like how heavy was it in how dependent was it on insurance?
Oh, so it was a fee, when I say fee for service, we accepted insurance.
Okay.
We didn't take HMOs. We didn't participate in any PPO plans, but we took insurance. In other words, you know, we would kind of estimate what the patient would owe us for their hygiene appointment. And then, you know, you'd collect $20 or whatever you think it would be. And then we'd send the paperwork in and wait to get it. So, but that changed because when the economy changed and we had a mass exodus of patients out of the practice, not just because people were moving out of Florida, because the economy died, we took on a couple of PPOs that encompassed somewhere around 35% of our patient population.
Okay.
And we did that for a number of years. We did it. Absolutely, we did that. 100% we did that. And so if you're doing that and you're maximizing the insurance, meaning that you're billing properly, not, and by the way, when we did this, not every patient needed four quadrants of scaling and root planing, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
We did things the right way, but let's face it, you're also taking a reduction in your fees with a tremendous write-off at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Our friend Margus, who you think is the best dentist on the planet, you said it.
You can always debate that because you've seen his stuff. I mean,
oh no, listen, there's no debating it. I've said this about Marge, and I want to go off. And this is, I'm going to spend more time on Margus than he spent on me the last time he was on.
Oh, there you go.
I think his patients are the most spoiled in the country.
Ooh, and
the
we might create a little beef here. Wait, go back. So most spoiled.
No, there's no
what?
Beef. No, okay. No. This is a huge compliment to my brother, right. Margus. Okay. The compliment is that for what he has a very large component of PPO, as you know.
He does.
And Bob makes a lot of, I don't want to use the word excuse. Come up with a different adjective for excuse.
Justification? Reason?
Justification of why. My favorite one is when he says he has a bunch of farmers, which makes me laugh, but yeah, okay. Right. They are getting some of the highest quality dentistry for some of the lowest fees in the country.
I agree.
It's almost obscene what happens. I've been there. He's worked on me. I've seen how he works. I see the quality of his dentistry. For what he charges and what the patient actually pays because they participate in network, It's obscene. I actually feel bad for him in that respect, mm-hmm. right? But he makes it work. And he's profitable dentist. He's a very profitable dentist because he knows his numbers. But the thing I always say about Margis is, and everybody else, it's not what they tell you, it's what they don't tell you. And what you need to know about Bob, and we'll get into this on the other podcast that we're going to do, is did you know that Bob, when he first went to college, was an accounting major?
I did not know that. University of Iowa, with Bob Stoops hanging out, he was an accounting major?
Hold on. Let me be real. And I'm giving away all his secrets. But his first 2 years of college, he went to Iowa State as an accounting major before he transferred to Iowa. And then he made a switch and got into biology to get the prereqs to get into dental school. So his foundation of numbers and understanding accounting is better than most dentists because that's what he was trained to do. Yeah. Makes a huge difference when you have a business background.
Okay, so this is really like, we should call this secrets revealed about other people.
That's what it is. It's secrets revealed.
No, you're speaking to something. So here's what you're doing for me, Rob. You're putting the pieces of the puzzle together because he knows those numbers off the top of his head in
one second.
Yeah, now I know why. Absolutely. So if you said
to Bob, or you said to me, then we're the same way. I mean, he has helped me, let's say this too. He's helped me a tremendous amount by doing numbers.
Right.
I mean, I've spent time on the phone with him and we share our numbers, by the way. Right. There are a lot of dentists either they overcompensate with their numbers and they're not exactly telling you the truth.
Right.
Or they're embarrassed to tell you the numbers because they're not good. I share everything with Bob and Bob shares all the numbers with me. Some of his numbers, I don't know how he gets to those numbers.
Right.
I don't know how some of his numbers are so low, but the difference also between me and Bob is he does so much more operative in his practice. And so that brings down his overall lab cost.
Right.
See, my lab cost is about 2 percentage points higher than his because I don't do as much operative. I do more indirect dentistry. But again, when you hear his overall percentage of lab cost, you think, geez, that's some of the lowest lab cost I've ever heard. But he's not telling you unless you ask the question,
right,
how many composites are you doing on a day? And when you hear the number of 8 or 10 per day, all of a sudden you understand that when he does 3 or 4 single units, he's bringing that lab cost down.
Yeah, that's so true. Now, there's a lot of layers here because if you're a young dentist and you're listening, you're like, where are we going with this? We're going to unveil all these secrets.
I want to add
one thing to what you said. Like, I don't get as many texts daily as you get from him, but he texts me one day. He's like, yeah, look at that. 22 minutes. I did a crown today. And it's gorgeous. Now, it's not about how fast. It's just very rarely can somebody do work like that efficiently.
And again, that's true. He's learned a model of efficiency, both in numbers and chairside dentistry. Right. That takes time, right? I mean, that doesn't come 2 years out of dental school.
Right.
And Bob is very proud. And every now and then I'll shoot him a picture of something that I've done because Bob, I mean, we use some of the same labs. We use Bobby Williams in Texas. I think you know Bobby. And you know Nelson Rigo.
Yep.
And I turned him onto another lab down that I use in Naples called ProLab. And I'll say, hey, Bobby, whose preps look better? And of course, Bobby goes, well, yours look better. And then he gets on the phone, Margis, he goes, oh, your preps look better. So we got that running thing going between us. But the level of efficiency, the model that he has in his practice allows him to be a very good dentist and being very profitable on a very low fee structure.
Right.
See, that's the other thing. His fee he always tells me, Ritter, if I had your fees, I'd be making X amount of money. I said, well, Bob, the only problem with that is you don't live in South Florida in Palm Beach County.
Yeah.
And my cost of living is infinitely higher than in Des Moines.
For sure. Now go back to this. So when you as it relates to your practice with the PPO thing and so you started incorporating, like, I got to think better about this and making the change. And so, it's not like the turn radius on this was like 2 years. I was able to turn it all around and gosh, we got it moving. The turn radius was much longer than that. What were some other challenges you had in communicating with the team? Because the patients subliminally or straightforward get that message, hey, listen, this isn't probably the dentistry for you type of a thing when you're talking.
Yeah, what happened was I started doing so much more smile design dentistry, in other words, porcelain veneers. And then the decor of the office changed from, what I bought, which was a mishmash of fishing pictures and golfing pictures to before and after smiles to headshots of patients who had done all of their dentistry.
Right.
I mean, it's very clear when you walked into the office after a period of time, and I say period of time, I'm talking 3 to 5 years to get there, that the emphasis and the direction of the practice was going to change. And some of it, you know, what? Listen, this was all self-induced. I want to make sure that everybody here understands. I allowed this to either happen to me, or then I took control and made those changes to where the patients decided I was not the right practice for them. But my feeling was always this, that if you're very good at what you do and you treat patients really well, that the right patients will find you. I've always said, just do the right thing for people. The money will always follow. Whenever you put the money first, you're going to have problems.
Yeah.
You're just going to have a ton of problems, right? The money will always come to you as long as you do the right thing. And this is the other joke, right? We talk about this all the time. When the patient knows that you're trying to sell them something, do they move forward on treatment?
No.
Nope. You have to do it in a way where you're educating the patient and make it seem like it doesn't mean anything to you whether they do it or not. You want to do it, great. You don't want to do it, great. But my thing has always been, if you don't do it, that's fine. But remember, if I told you to do this, and then you call me on Saturday night when you're out to dinner and you break the tooth, I'll see you on Monday.
Yeah, that's so interesting you say that.
That weekend.
Yeah, and you guys, we've all talked about this before. It's like the less you want it, the more they want it.
And they want it. Well, patients run to something that when you don't want it, they want it.
Right.
Right? That's human nature. People chase what they can't have. I mean, that's the way it is in human nature.
Yeah. Yeah. So how many years have you owned? So you said mid-90s. So we're talking, it's 20. Yeah. I'm terrible at math. What are we talking about?
Here's the story. I was an associate in the practice for 2 years. Bought it. I was the primary owner for 7. I had 2 associates. And then me and Ramsey bought the new space, built out the new office. Now, when I say new, that was 17 and a half, almost 18 years ago.
Okay.
And then just so you know, in the last year, we completely rehabbed the entire office. We completely ripped it apart and completely redid it.
So let's say I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm a young dentist listening. And so Ritter, I've seen you speak. You're great. You know, you don't understand. I got a lot of debt. Like what did you learn through this whole process that you would say, listen, I learned this the hard way. And there are some new things that we do, so I don't have to do that or experience that anymore. What are some of the hiring? And would you say hiring is easy now? You know,
no, hiring is even more difficult now because just because of COVID, it's because there's so many things that we could talk about here vertically.
Right.
Wow, I just went through my head of everything I want to talk about.
It's
very, first of all, it's very difficult to find the kind of help that you want in your practice.
Right.
It's very, you know, there was a period of time back in the mid to late 90s, Kirk, we were at full employment again. And the people that were coming in were what I called unemployable. You could not have them representing your practice.
Why?
Because everybody that was really quality was already working. Most of them were being well paid. Now we're talking again in the mid to late 90s. And what happened was that because we're at full employment sounds great to all the politicians, but for those who are employers, what you wind up getting are people who cannot represent your practice the way that you want it represented. Now, let's fast forward to today. Obviously, did you see last month more people resign their position than any other time in the history of the United States?
I did not. I heard something like that.
Okay, 10 million people walked away from their job.
Why?
It's called the Great Resignation. Well, it's a lot of things. First of all, the Fed and the government has flooded the country with money. Mm-hmm. So people who didn't have money before have money and they don't have to work as much as they did. Number two, because of COVID, a lot of industry has gone now towards at home, right? They don't have to come into the office anymore. People are more selective with the jobs because we have so many job openings. People can be very selective the jobs they're taking. They are demanding much higher salaries. Even our own president went on TV a couple of months ago and says, here's an idea, pay them more. Wow, great, thank you so much. That really helps the small business owners. You put all of those things together, then we go into dentistry specifically. Hygienists are difficult to find these days. Most practices are having a very difficult time finding hygienists.
Okay.
The majority of clinical assistants who come through the clinical assisting schools, they're only going through the school because they get points to when they apply to go to hygiene school. So most of the ones coming out of the school don't actually work in private offices. They're just doing it as a better chance to get into hygiene school. Mm-hmm. So then you're left with hiring people with no skill set to train them to be clinical assistants. You train them, you send them to schools to get X-ray certification, expanded duties, which turns out to be the best long-term patients for me, by the way.
Wow.
I don't like typically hiring. The two assistants that we have that have been with us for 14 years, we train them ourselves.
For right out of the gate. Like they didn't.
You know why? Because they didn't bring any bad habits from anybody else's office. Whenever I've attempted to hire another assistant from an office, they bring with them things that I don't care about. I don't care what the last dentist did. I really have no, it makes no difference to me. I have to spend a year teaching you the way, not just the way we do it. We're so dental material heavy and specific that it takes them. And every assistant that's been with us says, it really takes a full year to understand how and why you guys do it the way you do it. Yeah. But that's because we have dentistry that lasts 20 plus years.
Right. So again, I'm a young dentist. Just listen to this. So Rob, what would you say to me, like with a great resignation, like how do I even make sense of all this? Like, what would you tell them?
Unfortunately, we're all first of all, perseverance. You can't give in. Don't get bullied.
Yeah.
Hire the personality. You can always train skills, but you can't hire, you can't train a personality. And that's, you can't train a good-hearted person. You can't out-train a thief. You got to get a person that has a good heart, somebody that actually wants to be there, that wants to improve both personally and professionally. I love those people because I'll teach them the skill set.
Right.
As long as they want to be there, they're trustworthy, they're forthright, they believe in what you're doing, they enjoy what they're doing, that's what you want. I really believe hiring people that have very few skills for the position, but hiring the right personality is everything. Everything. My treatment coordinator had no skill set in dentistry, but she had the best. I call her a marshmallow soaked in honey. When you speak to Ashley on the phone, she's just so easy to talk to, so nice, so pleasant. She never raises her voice. She's perfect. Wow. She's perfect.
Yeah.
Right? But I hired the personality. She had no skill set in dentistry. I trained her.
Yeah. Now, once you find these people, you got to train them. Then you got to find a way to keep them. Then they have to stay engaged, you know, like in what you're doing all the time. So it's not.
That's part of the journey, though, isn't it? Though?
It is. It totally is.
It's not a, by the way, not a destination.
Right.
It's an ever constant journey that's changing directions. So let's take that piece by piece.
Okay.
You have to train. You cannot expect somebody to come into your office and do a high level, high skilled job 3 months in. Mm-hmm. Not going to happen. No. Kirk, how long is, I'll throw it back to you. To me, it's a year. In each position, it takes them a year, whatever position it is, for them to become unconsciously competent in what they're doing in my practice. What do you think?
I would agree with that. I think, sometimes it takes longer than that. I think it's the important piece is figuring out what you have early on so that you can make the further investment. That's why I'm a big fan of like a 3-3-3, which is in 3 days, we kind of figure out this, in 3 weeks we figure out this, and by 3 months we should be at this point. And that way the employee, the team member, in all fairness to the employee, the team member, they have a clear line of sight whether or not this is the right job. Now at the end of 3 weeks, well, I would tell you by the end of 3 days, if you've been doing this long enough, you know what you have kind of by 3 days. By 3 weeks, you know what you have for sure. And by 3 months, you absolutely know what you have. And so now it goes back to the title of the episode. Now you're not taking months. I've screwed it up way more than you have. I kept people on for years and years and years because I'm a wuss. You know what I mean? I like people. And so I agree with you. It's about a year before they really start to gain traction and make an impact, a big one.
I've never heard you say that, but I agree 100% what you said. I'm very close to what you do. At the end of the week, I kind of know what I've got.
Right.
The 3 weeks, not so much, but we give them 3 months. And at the end of 3 months, we tell them it's a training period.
Yeah.
And if it works out and you like what you're doing and we like you, we're great. If not, we both part ways. No harm, no foul. I'll give you a nice recommendation to find a job somewhere else.
Right.
I kept the hygienist on with me for probably a total of 15 years. I should have cut her 3 or 4 years in.
Why? But and be fair to both sides.
I'll tell you the reason why I kept her. Because I was afraid the patients would leave and follow her to another practice.
Okay. Now, wait, let's play this game. So let's pretend I'm going to ask her the question. So you guys used to work together. You heard what Rob said. What do you, because you know, my mom used to say there's always three sides to every story. There's his side, there's her side, and whatever. What would this hygienist say about, because I could tell you some of my team members would go, look, you were just crazy to work with because you were all over the place. It wasn't the safest, you know, most predictable.
No, I wouldn't say that. No.
What would your hygienist say?
My hygienist would say that I was not as empathetic as I needed to be for the patient's stories. See, but I have a feeling, I have a very specific way of thinking about this, and whether people believe this or not, whether they agree with me or not, makes no difference.
Right.
When you start feeling bad for the patient, you start making bad decisions.
I would agree with that because now you're speaking to sympathy instead of empathy. I think you could care for people a lot. But when you start feeling bad for their dental conditions, I mean, that's not your responsibility.
Oh, and not just that. She wanted me to feel badly for their financial considerations. Well, and my job, Bill Strupp has the, I got to give him credit because here's the difference between me and everybody else. Marge's Pilfer is the best line I ever came up with and never gives me credit for it.
What's that?
But when somebody, it's just because you don't want to do the right thing doesn't mean I'm going to do the wrong thing. Yeah. That was my line.
It is your line. It is.
It is my line. So what happened was I heard Bill Strupp say this. It's not my job to save the patient money. It's my job to maintain their dentition for a lifetime. Mm. And that's the bottom line. I am not there to save them money.
Right.
I'm not. That's not my job. My job is to maintain their dentition for a lifetime. And she wanted me to feel bad for every story of whether the person had a job that could afford the dentistry or they got laid off or their wife was, this is where Ramsey would go crazy. You know, as an alcoholic and going out to the bar every single night, I wouldn't say something like that. I'm just repeating what my partner would say. Right. But that's not my job. It's not my concern. My concern is, are you treated well in my practice?
Yeah.
I want to make sure that they're treated very, very well. That we don't overtreat patients. We to tell you what you need to do. We can do it for you in a timely, expeditious way. Longevity in a quality facility where it's comfortable, it's clean, nothing pushed on you. That's what my job is. She wanted something else from me.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, it just wasn't copacetic with what I believed in. It just wasn't. And so I maintained the relationship. And at times it was painful for both of us. I could tell you, we could spend an episode on everything that happened with this hygienist. She eventually retired, which was great for me and great for her.
Yeah. Well, I think we could have an episode of all those. And like, again, there's sides to every story, but the important piece is like, there's learning in all this. When you lose, don't lose the lesson. Cause I've screwed up again more than you have ever. Now, how old are you today?
57.
Okay. So you're 57. And so you're in the same place I am in your career. Like you're enjoying the second half, like the, you know, like what's happening.
The back nine.
I know. I love that. What's the future look like for you when it comes to team? Let's stay on the path of like team.
Yep,
when
we talk about,
what's it look like for you?
Hire people now. In fact, we just hired somebody today.
Okay.
So here's how it works.
What role?
Another clinical assistant.
Okay, cool.
Okay. We just need more help. We just need more help. Kirk, if I told you some of the things going on, you wouldn't even like some of the things going on in the practice, even today, even in a well-run practice. We're booking new patients out till April. Wow. We can't get them. We don't have enough slots.
Okay.
Okay.
What's the future look like for you with team?
Well, first of all, when we hire people, they come in for a working interview, and then I let my team hire them.
Okay. How does that work?
In other words, they all spend time with the person.
Okay.
And whether it be 1 or 2 days or a couple of days they're in the office, whatever position it is, then they all get together and I say to them, what do you think of Joan? Mm-hmm. And they'll go, well, we really liked her. You know, one person, let me give the example of this new one. You know, Dr. Ritter, this assistant, I didn't have to tell her what to do. She already went to go get this. So she did this and she knew where to put this. She goes, I didn't even show her anything. And she already knew ahead of time. Intuitively what to do without me telling her.
Yeah.
That's a good sign. The other assistant says to me, oh, we were talking with her. She said some really nice things about to the patient. You could tell she was well. The other girls, they were spending time with her. They had great things to say. They had great conversations. I said, great, you hire her. Because here's the thing. If it goes sideways, they were the ones that made the hire. It's on them, not me. I'm not forcing anybody down their throat because they're the ones that work with them more than I do.
Right. So they get to weigh in so they can buy in and then they can get behind the decision because they're going to be spending a lot of time with this person, right?
More than me. Right. Remember, I take your advice. How many days a week do I work chairside?
I don't even know now, like, because you guys have done a lot of cool stuff. Where are you at? You're at 3 days?
I've been at 3 days for 3 years.
Okay. So you work, what do you work? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Ramsey works Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Okay, cool. Very cool.
Okay. Now, on Thursdays is my admin day.
All right.
Admin. Today I was at the bank. I was my accountant. I've been working on a project with an implant company. I'm doing your podcast today. I had to talk to my wife. You know, my wife's a dentist in the practice. So I had to talk to her about some of the things for the practice. She goes in and she's seeing patients right now. And so there's always coverage at the practice, but I've been doing 3 days a week. It's transformative. And I know you say this a lot. And I can't buy into this more than you would say it. The only thing is, if you're a young practitioner, it's hard to only work 3 days a week. You need to put the time in at the front end so that you eventually on the back nine can get to 3 days a week. I'm in a sweet spot. I mean, I am. And so is Margis and so is the other guys. We're at the sweet spot, right? We're at that age where we have a following. We have brand recognition. We have longevity. We have a quality that's associated with us and the practice to where people want to come see us. And I appreciate that. And I'm going to do things over a 3 day period. Now, the other thing the young dentists don't know, here's another side note. I've had two neck surgeries, Kirk.
So, okay. What kind of surgeries?
I've had two neck surgeries.
Okay. But like
herniated discs okay. From dentistry, which is a common thing in dentistry because of poor posture. And so I can't physically work more than 3 days. Right. I'm exhausted at the end of 3 days. In fact, I have a standing appointment in an hour and a half from now with my physical therapist once a week who does massage, cupping, stretching episodes for me so that I can feel good. I feel good over the weekend. Then I go back into it on Monday. Yeah. That's just the reality of where you are after practicing for 28 years. And having two neck surgeries. So my advice to young dentists, get the best quality loops that improve your posture and your ergonomics early in your career. Do not make exceptions for patients who will knock up back in the chair because you're just ruining your neck and stick to your guns. Yeah. I have a very simple answer now. It's so easy, Kirk, you can't believe it. When I go to click the chair for the patient to go back and they say, no, I can't go back. First thing I say to them is, how do you sleep at night? Because if they say, I go to this in my neck and I go, I've had two neck surgeries. Either you go back in the chair or the appointment is over.
Yeah. Wow.
It's harsh. It's a little harsh maybe for the young dentist, but let me tell you, it's not as harsh as going through a disc replacement surgery. Yeah. So if you don't want to go through that, don't make the compromise for the patient. This is a big sticking point for me.
Yeah.
Well, I want the young dentist to do the right thing. I want them to do the right thing and I want them to make the patient happy. But remember, those patients, when they leave the practice, they forget about you. They don't care if your neck hurts when you go home that night.
Mm-hmm.
They don't.
Well,
and you have to be selfish with your health.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the things that happens as you age is you get more clear, and clear is kind, you know. And I mean, even Bill Robbins, it's all in delivery. And Bill Robbins, he has a lot of patients when he'll see the case and they'll go, it isn't white enough. And he goes, no, they're plenty white. You know, like he's like, I used to get really
well,
stressed.
That.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do that when you're practicing 40 years and you're who I call the teacher's teacher, Bill, my amigo.
Yeah.
And you can do those sort of things. Now, of course, I'm propping this up a little bit for you. I mean, I literally do point to my neck and say, listen, I've had two neck surgeries. And
right.
The fact is, if you can't go back in the chair, I just can't do this anymore. I just go home and I hurt. And you know what? Other than one patient in the last 5 years of my surgery, one patient refused to go back. I said, I'll see if Dr. Ramsey will work on you. And they did. And Ramsey switched out and he took over. But everybody else goes back in the chair.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a different story. I want the young practitioner to take away from this today that there's a lot of different ways to do this. Not one way is right. That These are not short-term fixes. These are long-term goals for yourself and your practice. Things that are worthwhile always take time.
Yep.
There's no shortcut to greatness. No. There is no shortcut to greatness, Kirk. None.
Yeah.
None.
Now I want you to, you guys are doing something very cool. And it's really cool what you're doing. And we'll talk about that in a second. But wrap this, put this in a nice little bow for me, because when you say it took me a long time to really pick where I want to go and then get the right people in the right seats and all that kind of stuff, a big part of it was your education, like really building a lot of knowledge around it. And you mentioned, finish your thought on that.
Well, I'm just going to take off what you said. Education was everything for me in dentistry. Education is everything. When you graduate dental school, you walk out with a degree that allows you to start learning. That's what it is. Because there's no way that dental school can teach you everything that you need to know. It's not. It's just not.
Right.
So now you got to come out of school. You have to start practicing, get your speed up, learn the business acumen that's going to be critical in your long-term success to be financially stable.
Yeah.
That allows you to do the things both in your office and outside of your office that make you happy, so that you're not doing things just for the money. And that all comes from education. And not only from the education is going to allow you to determine the type of dentist that you want to be.
Yep.
Maybe you want to be the dentist, a general dentist that only wants to do surgery. That's great. Take all the best CE, go to Justin Moody's course, Implant Pathway. You want to learn how to do a set of dentures better than anybody? Go to Joe Massad's course.
Yep.
You want to learn how to do endo, take Buchanan's. I mean, there's just so many different opportunities out there for education. And from there, you start weeding away the things that you don't want to do, that either you're not good at and don't interest you, you get no joy out of. We've talked about joy so many times, right?
Yeah.
If there's no joy in it, don't do it.
Right.
Right? So figure out what you want to do.
Yeah. Now you're getting a lot of joy from this. And we talked about this too. Like you're an incredible speaker, educator out there. And now you guys are doing, both you and Ramsey are, you're doing your course in your office called The Protocol. To further illustrate and help people put this into play, what is it? How did you guys come up with it? Where was it on the back of a napkin one night in a restaurant type of a thing? Like, how did this come to be?
Okay, so give me 120 seconds. When I came out of school, I did the Dawson Academy. I took a couple courses down at Panky. I did all of Spear. I did all of Coise. And these are tremendous places to learn volumes of information.
Right.
What I quickly realized, though, the one piece that they cannot do in the setting that they do it is how do you implement it in your practice? And I see sometimes either frustration or stagnation from dentists who go through Coise. And I'll say to them, I'll see them at meeting, hey, how many arches did you do this year based on what you learned? They're like, two. Two arches, it cost you $50,000 of education, 5 weeks of your life to get the best of the best, and you've gone back and you haven't done anything with it. I mean, maybe you've done some implants. I want to make sure you understand it's not all based on arches, but you're taking this tremendous information source and you're not really utilizing it to the highest potential possible. Mm-hmm. And so I saw that as a major stumbling block for a lot of people. And what happened was during COVID, very beginning of the year, we've talked about this. The thought of getting on planes to go lecture now just doesn't do it for me anymore. I did it for 23 years. A lot of Seattle study clubs, a lot of meetings across the country, both state meetings, national meetings, academy meetings. I just didn't enjoy it anymore. I get anxiety getting on planes. And coming out of Florida is not an easy place to go.
Right.
Everything's a connection, a lot of delays, a lot of missed flights. So you know what? I got to do something where people come to beautiful South Florida. Why don't you come to beautiful South Florida in February
when it's the not weather a bad is place to go.
North?
Yeah.
It's a great place. I mean, today it's 77 degrees outside.
Oh, right? Now you're rubbing it in.
Sorry. Well, it's the truth. I mean, but we pay the price for it here too because we have hurricanes and you don't have hurricanes.
Right.
So here's the story. I said, you know what, Ramsey, here's what happens. I thought about this. Why don't we do a 2-day course? The first day we'll just really connect with people on how to, you ever hear the line, show me the bait that you're using, I'll show you the fish that you're going to attract.
No, I never have. I've heard the whole teach me how to fish thing, but that's a nice little touch.
Yeah. I mean, the bait, you know, your fish that you catch are all dependent on the bait that you use. So I said, let's talk about how we acquire patients through digital, you know, social media interaction, having a good website.
Right.
Then you'll talk to them because Chris's forte is really about body language and understanding human emotion and why people connect on a certain level. Mm-hmm. You've heard him. He's great. And then we'll talk about that the first day.
Okay.
And then the second day will be all about the dentistry, how to properly prepare a tooth, how to open the vertically consistently, how to use digital chairside scanners, not just to do full mouth reconstruction, but on every new patient and wow them with technology that they don't have at any other practice. Let's show them all of those things, how we utilize our digital cameras and put it up on a 50-inch TV and cycle through and show people on an app how to show them what their teeth look like and why compared to other cases when you're cycling through those on your phone using a screen share. We go over all that in the two-day course.
Yeah, so it's a two-day course in your office. You do all of it there. You pull back the curtain and show them what you do, how you do it, all that kind of stuff.
We have breakout sessions in the oversized operatory showing people how we do actual chair-side consultations.
Okay.
We have four of our team members there. During the breakouts, they get to ask the team members, how do you present treatment? How do they transfer the patient to you? What paperwork do you give them? How do you deal with insurance? How do you schedule these patients? How do you collect the deposit 2 weeks before you start the case? How do you collect the full amount of money 2 weeks before the case, before you ever start? So money never comes into the conversation.
So you collect the balance 2 weeks prior to even the start, right?
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So to come in for digital records, which is, you know, pictures, videos, digital scan, so much that goes in. We show everybody that you collect a deposit for the records. And then 2 weeks before the actual prep date, you collect 100%. So when the patient shows up that day, they're not stopping at the front desk to whip out their card or tell you that they forgot their checkbook, they forgot their credit card, they left it at home. All of the negativity of doing dentistry is out the window. Yeah. We go over all that in 2 days. We feed you gourmet meals. We took them out to Palm Beach for dinner. We give you $1,500 worth of products that we talk about the next day. They're all donated from the clinical manufacturers who we partnered with through this program. We show people the digital workflows. If you can't go home and implement what we're talking about on Monday, I failed you. And that's not what's happening. I could show you the list of people who have gotten back to me and said, you've transformed my practice. I sold 2 arches the first Monday back. It's transformative for these people.
That's awesome.
Got to be honest with you. If this is the type of dentistry you want to do, why you wouldn't take this course, I don't know why. It's not a replacement for going to any of these teaching curriculums. I want to make sure you understand that and the listeners understand that. This is an addendum course. This is tying it all together in a way that is just, there's nothing. Every one of my friends who have come has said, Ritter, the great thing about your course is nobody else is teaching this. It's not a copy of something else that's out there. Nobody else is doing what we're doing.
Very cool. When is the next one? So if I'm a dentist and I'm listening, so when is the next one? How do I find it? Where do I go?
Well, let's go through this. The next one is February 4th and 5th. It's sold out with a 20-person waiting list.
Okay.
The next one is May. That's sold out with a 10-person waiting list.
Wow.
I have a few seats available in August.
In August. Okay.
In August. Yeah. If you go to my website, The Protocol Live, one word, theprotocollive.com, one word, there's a link to Eventbrite for you to sign up for some of the seats that are available.
Yeah.
And whenever I do an Instagram Live, I do a podcast, I do a Facebook Live, we talk about it. All of a sudden, ding, 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 people start signing up and it sells out. And then I've noticed something. We didn't get to talk about this. If you want to end with this.
Yeah.
People are now traveling to smaller group courses, number one, not these big lectures anymore. They're going to smaller group learning because they learn more and it's a shared environment and they're traveling with friends and colleagues.
Yeah.
So what we've had each time is we'll have two or three people, sometimes four, they book it together and they come together. And it's a completely different experience for them.
That's a great point because I am seeing that trend quite a bit. People want to go and be with people they love and learn together in an intimate environment.
Intimate environment, not the 500-person classroom anymore. They're coming. You know, it's small. Listen, this is not going out to Spear and sitting in that wonderful hall of 250 people. It's not that. You come to my office, there's 14 people at a time. But what that does for you is you have one-on-one interaction with me and Chris, our team members, and the other dentists that are there. The sharing of information is beyond belief what people go back with. It's almost overwhelming, but that's great because that's going to stimulate you and motivate you to do even better. And everybody that's left this, I got a card the other day. Two brothers came from Virginia. They got recommended from a dentist that came from Virginia. They go, "You've just transformed our practice." The first morning huddle we came back, it transformed everything in our practice.
That's awesome.
I wish I had this course 25 years ago.
For sure. You know, the intimate settings are key. You just get to know people. I always like to get to know the people behind the information.
Yeah. The stories are the best. I love the stories of dentists. Don't you? I mean, it's all about the stories, right?
I really do.
It's all about the stories of people. I love learning their stories. I love learning about their backgrounds, what they want to be. Ramsey just spoke at DIA. I spoke at DIA a couple years ago. A young dentist comes up to me in December and she starts asking me some questions. And I'm like, she's telling me her story. And I said, "I got to ask you a question. Why? I can hear it in your voice what you want to do. Why are you not doing it?" Because I don't know. And as I'm telling her, I'm bringing it out of her. She goes, "Yes, I want to do that. Yes, I'm going to do that." She starts to cry. And not because she's upset with me. She goes, "I don't know what it is about you, but all of a sudden I am now empowered to go back to my practice and make the changes to do the dentistry that I want to do." That's awesome for you.
Yeah. Thus not taking so long to do it, right? So it's good stuff.
Let's grind it all back. Don't take as long as I took.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some valuable lessons there. And if you want to reach out to me, you can on Instagram, Dr. Rob Ritter. It's pretty simple. And I'll answer the questions on DMs, but just, you want to do something, do it. Don't let if I listened to every person that told me not to do it or I'd fail, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. That's for sure.
That's for sure. Hey, I'm just going to say this. You guys, if you're listening, check it out. You're going to see in the show notes. I don't care if you're listening to Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, wherever. Flip up to the show notes. You're going to see a link to Ritter and Ramsey's course, The Protocol. I'm going to highly encourage you to check it out. And I'm also going to encourage you to follow Rob on Instagram. I'm terrible at this, but like yours is really exceptional. And we got to have you come back and share with all of our listeners how the heck you do that, because it's very unique what you guys do. So make sure you check that out. And it's cool that you answer the DMs, which I don't even know what that means, but like, I'm sure it's something where people, direct messaging or something, I'm thinking. So, but
that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I look forward to doing this with you. I know you're going to have Chris on soon.
Yeah.
And then you'll hear his perspective as well, which is great. We're going to try to get on and do things together. And, I love sharing. You know, at the end of the day, I've achieved what I wanted to achieve in my profession. I set certain goals for myself, and it's not about me anymore. I really enjoy the dentistry, working with patients. When I'm working with them a long time, I get to know their stories. It's all about the stories, getting human emotion. It's wonderful. And then helping the young dentists, because as you know, it's so difficult right now, isn't it? We haven't talked about DSOs. We haven't talked about group practices. We haven't talked about partnerships. When me and Chris come back on, I want to specifically talk about partnerships, because we gave Brian Baliwas, the SF dental nurse.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And Adam, I don't want to say it's presumptuous for me to say taking them under our wing, but we call them R&R 2.0 because we see ourselves in them, because they're significantly younger than us.
Yeah.
And we have shared so much business information with them because I want them to succeed. Because at some point, me and Chris are not going to do this anymore. And there has to be a good partnership that's nationally relevant that people listen to that can continue this forward movement of what a quality partnership is about in dentistry, which is pretty rare.
For sure. We'll definitely have you back and chat about that and the details of it. So thank you, brother, for being on. I mean, there's so many other questions I want to ask you, but like, I love this. And so if you're listening as a young dentist, don't take so long. Sometimes you just got to start taking those steps in the right direction, and you'll see people will opt in or opt out for the future that you're trying to create. So thanks, brother, for being on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Great spending time with you as always, my friend.
As always. So stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for tuning in to the Best Practices Show. I hope you enjoyed today. Like, I really enjoyed today. If you did, do us a favor, just share this with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things you want to see. Make sure you check out Ritter and Ramsey's Protocol. It's awesome. I promise you, you'll learn a ton. It'll transform your practice, and you'll be glad you did. So until we see you next time, remember, guys, every time you improve your practice, your life gets a little bit better. So enjoy your day. We'll see you next time on the Best Practices Show. And there you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.